Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 27th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Sewing Superheroes. Garfield Montessori Club Provides Capes for Schoolmates. This is from Decatur by Valerie Wells. Marissa Pritz has been sewing with her Nana, Lucy Lunt, since she was five. She's made a music tote dress and a bathing suit and has her own sewing machine and can do quite a lot of the work with minimal assistance. So joining the 4-H club at Garfield Montessori Schools that's devoted to sewing was an obvious choice. If we have an advanced group next year, she'll be in it, said Scarlett Wells, owner of The Fabric Cobbler and teacher of the sewing class. Sewing fits in with Garfield's Montessori method of education in several ways, Wells said. It's a STEAM activity, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Students can use those academic skills in choosing fabric, fitting patterns, and creating projects. We are using the 4-H curriculum because we're a 4-H approved club, Wells said. My shop donated two machines to use so the children would have them to sew on, and the 4-H club donated some as well, and I donated my time to teach. Montessori learning emphasizes real-world skills and self-sufficiency, too, and sewing fits in with both those goals. Most of the kids were willing to dive right in because that's what they're used to doing at school, Wells said, even when it came to threading a sewing machine, which isn't easy. One of the students, Logan Hallam, had to rip out the same seam 6 times before he got it sewed straight and never once lost his cool. I just stayed calm until I got it right, said Logan, a third grader. This year, the sewing club made pillowcases, table runners to give their moms for Mother's Day, and superhero capes for the students in the social-emotional skills class. Wells joked that she told the kids that the table runner project was a rare occasion when it was okay to fib. If mom asked what they were doing, they had to make something up so they wouldn't spoil the surprise. The class on social-emotional skills uses a superhero theme because kids love superheroes, said school social worker Tracy Daniels. The superhero is Superflex, and his superpower is that he has a flexible mind. With 14 villains ranging from Rock Brain, who doesn't stop playing video games when he's called to dinner, for example, to Glass Man, who overreacts to situations, the students have been learning to stop, think, take deep breaths, and change their self-talk. As explained by Sebastian Massey, a third grader who is one of the trainers helping other kids learn to be like Superflex, you have to change the way you think. What if you're losing your temper? I'd stop and take 3 deep breaths, said Elliot Steele, another third grade trainer. Obviously, these kids needed superhero capes, Wells said, and it was a good project for the 4-H group, because the capes are a little tricky to cut out. Wells and Principal Mary Anderson did that part, but the kids chose the fabric and did the sewing and presented the capes to their schoolmates on Friday, the last day of school. And this article has a photograph that accompanies it, of a long line of children in brightly colored capes, and the caption is, Garfield Montessori 4-H Sewing Club leader Scarlett Wells helps the group make capes for students in the school's social and emotional learning program, led by social worker Tracy Daniels, also in the picture. And continuing on the front page, next, a little weekend fun at Nelson Park. Paddleboard rentals, ropes course, among available amenities. For Abby McIntosh, Memorial Day weekend means the start of another summer on Lake Decatur. Despite overcast skies and wave of light rain early Sunday afternoon, McIntosh stayed hopeful for sunshine. She kicked off Standing Paddle Co. Decatur's third season of offering paddleboard rentals at a spot near the Beach House restaurant in Nelson Park. It's always a great day to give someone the opportunity to get out on the water and try something new, said McIntosh, who co-owns the business with her husband, Aaron. Marcia Quartz of Decatur was paddleboarding with her daughter, Amy Cressa, and granddaughters, 10-year-old Piper and 13-year-old Gillian Cressa. This isn't something most people in Decatur would expect to have access to, said Quartz. There is really nothing better than getting out on the lake for a bit and trying something you really didn't know about. The paddleboard rentals are among a number of amenities taking shape in the East Side Park in recent years. The Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater opened its first season Friday with a show by 38 followed by Winona and the Big Noise on Saturday and Forever Motown on Sunday. Overlook Adventure Park opened in 2014 with a ropes course added in 2017. A new water park is set to open next year, and a new restaurant, Everyone's Fair Food, will move into the space near US 36 that had been formerly occupied by Cherry Berry. The new things coming to Nelson Park are exciting because current paddleboard renters will get to try something different, Abby McIntosh said, and guests brought in by the new businesses will get exposure to paddleboarding. James Dunwell Freeman, a Decatur Park District employee working at Overlook Adventure Park, said the opening of the concert venue in particular will help business. The amphitheater will draw more people into the area who want to explore Nelson Park, Dunwell Freeman said. We can't wait to get more people here to check out the mini golfing and ropes course. The Adventure Park offered free admission to veterans in celebration of Memorial Day. The Mendoza family took advantage of sunnier parts of the day on the park's ropes course. Brandy Mendoza brought her three children to the park to celebrate the 11th birthday of her daughter, Delilah Mendoza. She specifically asked to come here, and I agreed because this is the perfect place to get the kids outside and active, Brandy Mendoza said. We love seeing them so happy to be outside on such a beautiful weekend. And there's a sidebar to the article, Standing Paddle Company Decatur upcoming events. Visit Standing Paddle Company Decatur on Facebook for more information. But on May 27th at 9:30 a.m., Booty and Boards. May 31st at 5:30 p.m., Run One, Sup One. June 2nd, 9:30 a.m., SUP, which is Stand Up Paddleboard Yoga. On June 16th at 8 p.m., Full Moon Paddle. This is also Stand Up Paddleboard. And on June 16th at 8 p.m., there will be a Full Moon Paddle for kayaking. And continuing on the front page, Illinois General considered creator of Memorial Day. Civil War General John A. Logan is credited with creating what we know today as Memorial Day, according to the executive director of the museum in Murfreesboro, Illinois, that is dedicated to him. Logan was born February 9, 1826, in Jackson County, on family property that became a part of the city of Murfreesboro in 1843. General Logan founded Memorial Day as a national holiday, said P. Michael Jones, executive director of the General John A. Logan Museum. He did that when he issued General Order No. 11 on May 5, 1868, as Commander-in-Chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, sometimes referred to as the GAR. Jones said several cities have claimed to be the first to observe Memorial Day, or Decoration Day, as it was called after the Civil War. The question is not who started the Memorial Day we have today. It was John A. Logan, Jones said. The question is, where did Logan get his idea? Jones said historians have several theories about where it started. However, according to research, newspapers printed in the 1930s and 1940s stated Memorial Day started in the South. Jones said today some southern states observe Confederate Memorial Day. In her book, Reminiscences of a Soldier's Wife, an Autobiography, Logan's wife, Mary Logan, wrote about her March 1868 visit to Virginia. In the courtyard near Petersburg, we saw hundreds of graves of Confederate soldiers. These graves had upon them small, bleached Confederate flags and faded flowers. She said her husband, General Logan, was interested in her trip when she returned and told him how touched she was to see the decorated graves. General Logan issued the general order to observe Memorial Day 2 months later, in May 1868. However, Jones said historians believe John A. Logan should have been aware of the memorial observations being made in the South due to press coverage at the time. Logan, as commander-in-chief of the GAR, a Union veterans organization, issued General Order No. 11, the Memorial Day Order, on May 5, 1868, from the GAR headquarters in Washington, D.C. Jones said the GAR was a precursor to the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legion. At the time he issued his general order, Logan was also an Illinois representative at large of the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the whole state of Illinois and not one specific district. The Memorial Day General Order states, "The 30th of May, 1868, is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion, and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land. Let us, then, at the time appointed, gather around their sacred remains and garland the passionless mounds about them with the choicest flowers of springtime. It is the purpose of the Commander-in-Chief to inaugurate this observance with the hope that it will be kept up from year to year, while a survivor of the war remains to honor the memory of his departed comrades." According to Jones, Logan's general order is still read during memorial ceremonies around the United States. And next, Duckworth honors the fallen. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth spends Memorial Day honoring her friends in the military who have fallen and the heroic soldiers who kept her from numbering among the dead. "Memorial Day is a day to honor our heroic dead," said Duckworth, the junior senator from Illinois. "People often confuse Veterans Day with Memorial Day. Veterans Day is when we thank our veterans for their service, and Memorial Day is specifically to honor the fallen." Duckworth retired from military service in 2014 with the rank of lieutenant colonel after serving 23 years. She flew Black Hawk helicopter combat missions during Operation Iraqi Freedom and was awarded the Purple Heart. Deployed to Iraq in 2004, it was on November 12th of that year when a rocket-propelled grenade took down her helicopter. She lost her legs and has limited use of her right arm. "I think every Memorial Day about the guys from the Illinois National Guard that I knew that never made it home from Iraq," Duckworth said. "Whether it's the CH-47 Chinook helicopter crew that was shot down in Iraq from the Peoria unit, or whether it was Sergeant First Class Bill Cheney of my own unit out of Chicago Midway Airport, who was a Vietnam veteran and deployed to Iraq at the age of 59, who died of natural causes and never made it home, or whether it was the young men that as a public official I went to their deployment ceremony out of Woodstock, Illinois, who were killed coming back." Duckworth said the Chinook CH-47 helicopter, shot down on November 2, 2003, was part of the Illinois Army National Guard unit based in Peoria. 16 were killed and 20 wounded. Among the dead was Illinois Army National Guard pilot, First Lieutenant Brian D. Slavinas. Friends and family in Genoa described Slavinas to the Associated Press as a gentle giant, a non-violent man who felt a duty to his country. He wasn't one of those gung-ho, wanna-go-to-war type guys, his brother Eric Slavinas told AP. He was there to do a job. Duckworth said people serve their country in the military for many reasons. She began Army Reserve Officer Training Corps, ROTC, at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., after the fall of the Berlin Wall. I found myself in all of my classes becoming friends with either currently serving guardsmen and reservists or with veterans in my class on the GI Bill, Duckworth said. I remember watching the Berlin Wall come down, and I remember seeing all of those East Germans and Czechoslovakians fleeing the Soviet Union. People were grabbing whatever possessions they could carry and running into freedom, Duckworth said. And I remember thinking how proud I was to be an American, and it was my nation standing with the NATO allies that represented freedom and liberty. I fell in love with the meritocracy of the Army and decided that this was something I wanted to do as part of my life, Duckworth said. I just wanted to do my part for this nation that I love more than my own life. And Donette Beckett writes, honoring their service. This is from the Together Decatur series. World War II vets fill Decatur VFW Hall with respect, memories. Whenever World War II veterans Glenn Polk and Richard Ray attend an event at the Orrin L. Davis Veterans of Foreign Wars Hall Post 99, the audience stands. Quartermaster Fred Wobry makes sure of it. Having two men here who helped save this country then, it makes us walk around with our chests out, Wobry said. Polk, 100, and Ray, 97, of Hammond, are the only active lifetime World War II veterans still involved with Post 99 at 3920 North Martin Luther King Drive in Decatur. Polk recently celebrated his 100th birthday at the VFW Hall. Nearly 80 friends and family members packed the venue, which had many mementos and keepsakes of the war displayed. But it's Polk's stories about his time in the service that attract people to his side, eager to hear first-hand accounts of all that he saw. As the number of veterans who served during the war continue to dwindle, such memories become more precious. Polk enlisted in the Army a month after the December 7, 1941, Japanese attack on the U.S. Naval Base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The attack startled the nation to action, and Polk and Ray were among the more than 16 million Americans who served until the war's victorious conclusion on September 2, 1945. After enlisting, Polk spent time in basic training and mechanical school and preparing for the Allies' ultimate offensive, D-Day, on June 6, 1944. On that day, Polk found himself headed to France and eventually Germany as the Allies rolled back Nazi occupation across Europe. Polk's job during the war was to transport munitions as part of the 7th Armored Division. He was under the command of General George S. Patton, but way under him, said his son-in-law, Dennis Moore. Polk had several memorable experiences during World War II, including his part in the Battle of the Bulge in December 1944 and January 1945, the last German offensive of the war. At one point, an 88mm shell flew over the men's heads, but missed the group. It was terribly cold, he said. They had big bullets and big guns. Polk saw soldiers being injured, he said, but nothing compared to the emotions he felt when describing the human frailty he witnessed during the release of prisoners from a German concentration camp. I had seen the people coming out, some of them even crawling out of the place, he said. There were probably over 100 people. They were just trying to get away. Germany ultimately surrendered on May 8, 1945, VE Day. In another part of the globe was Ray, who had enlisted as a 20-year-old in 1942 and was trained in California to prepare for desert fighting conditions. As part of the Army's 269th Ordnance Group, Ray heard talk of where he would go. The fighting was going pretty fast over in North Africa, he said. The rumor was we were supposed to go there when they were hit the hardest. Instead, Ray was sent west to guard Pearl Harbor. The job was to watch for Japanese submarines and aircraft. After the attack, many Americans believed the West Coast would be the next target. We set the islands up for defense, he said. We had our weapons ready. If an airplane flew over, we were up fast. According to Ray, if the Japanese could obtain Hawaii, the United States would be next. The rumors were high, he said. Although the soldiers were in constant fear of being attacked, they still found ways to unwind when they could. They attended luaus and sang along with other musicians. Ray remembers one of his favorite bands to dance to was Harry Owens and Hilo Hattie. Ray was also a boxer. No one was off limits, including an officer. I didn't have any more troubles with that sergeant, said Ray, a corporal. Much of his time was spent moving from island to island, working on vehicles. Most of it was traveling, Ray said, of his time in the service. After 2 years in Hawaii, Ray returned to the United States and was discharged on December 31, 1945. The passing years have been good, Ray said, except the loss of hearing in his right ear. It threw my balance off, he said. Ray attends the VFW hall regularly. Although he isn't as steady on his feet, he spends much of the time dancing, the jitterbug, or anything fast, which makes his stepdaughter nervous. He dances with everybody, the young girls, the older women, Debbie Robison said. I'm a wreck. The style of music isn't important, old or new, but I don't go too much for hillbilly music, Ray said. Polk's birthday party at the VFW hall was a surprise. He received several military gifts, including a folded flag, pins, and speeches by American Legion personnel. The venue used to be a regular entertainment stop for Polk, but after celebrating his birthday in March, his energy has begun to diminish. I don't go as much now that I'm sick, he said. In the past, Polk would listen to music and socialize with friends and fellow veterans. We just sat there to see what was going on, he said. They had big crowds. If we went there at 7 in the evening, we'd stay until 11 at night, said his daughter Becky Moore. He was a regular party animal, Dennis Moore said. Polk hasn't danced much recently, but he said he has just as much fun watching others. According to his family, Polk is admired at the VFW hall. He is treated like a king, Dennis Moore said. The veterans are really good about that, Becky Moore said. They are so respectful to each other. And next, the future of Lake Decatur. Doc talk. No immediate plans in sight. The boats are back in the waters of Lake Decatur this Memorial Day weekend, with owners ready to enjoy the fruits of a multi-year dredging project and hear music from the new Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater drifting across the waves. While some aspects of a long-term plan to transform the lakefront have cruised ahead in recent years, one key component has not. Installation of uniform upgraded docks for private boat clubs along the shoreline. City and Decatur Park District officials said recently that they continue to discuss how that vision could become reality someday, though there are no plans in place right now. We look forward to those conversations, Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said. We don't know what upgrading all of the docks would look like, as we're way too preliminary into it. Upgrading the docks has been part of the plan since 2011, when both government bodies approved the concept, later dubbed Lakeshore Landing. The plan envisioned transforming the city's east side into a hub for recreation over a decade or longer. That plan also called for the creation of consistent standards for all the docks along the Nelson Park shoreline. Officials said new rules would address safety concerns about electricity and would require boat clubs that might have been neglecting dock maintenance to step up their efforts. Public opinion was heavily sought during the initial stages of putting together the Lakeshore Landing concept. Some boaters objected to the uniform dock idea, fearing subsequent fee increases would bring them out of the lake. They also objected to losing the ability to customize their own docks. To showcase what they'd like the new marina to look like, the City and Park District built a cluster of new uniform docks as part of a promenade located near the Beach House restaurant at 2301 South Lakeshore Drive. Response was initially tepid. By the second season, they were open. The Park District was unable to fill all of the available spots. Since then, Clevenger said, popularity of the docks has grown. He said there's currently a waiting list of about 10 or 12 people wanting to sign up for dock rentals, as all of the ones available for rent are full. We see the people have gravitated toward the product, Clevenger said. The dock project is probably a process that has to evolve with the city and the park district working together. We kind of just have to methodically work our way through different phases of input. City Manager Scott Wrighton said the boat docks are just one aspect of the large, complex issue that is the city's management of Lake Decatur. He said the city and park district have had discussions on potential ways the two bodies can continue to collaborate. Most recently, those talks have led to the city and park district agreeing to partner and provide gas sales to boaters at Nelson Park for the 2019 boating season. We have had and continue to have collaborative discussions, Wrighton said. And we will continue with the second half of this article in the second half hour of our reading. But I will mention that there is a photograph accompanying this article of a little boy in a safety jacket sitting on a boat. Micah Hunter awaits a boat ride on Lake Decatur on Wednesday. Upgrading the docks have been part of a plan since 2011. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, May 27th, 2019. Please stay tuned.